welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 209. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me for this infinite edition of the podcast, we have Peter Vanishing Point Willington.
Hello.
And Keith, far as the eye can see, Andrew.
What's the tenuous link between these words? I'm not...
Infinite. Distance. Length.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay, yeah. That seemed to be revealed. I see, yeah.
Every time with you.
Sorry, I have no idea what you were talking about for a second. And then.
Any little hinting link that I attempt to do, I slip in to lead us towards our destination, and then I get Keith doing the subtitled version. He's like, oh, would you deconstruct it? Oh, I see, it's about the thing, and yeah.
You get to my age, you don't believe in the magic anymore. You know, it's...
You're telling me the magic's dead? The
magic's dead.
Oh.
Especially Disney magic.
Ooh! Don't spoil it.
I thought I was serving a handy link there, but no.
As you can hear, one of our number is not feeling that well.
Hello, I'm poorly.
Oh, yes, Peter's feeling a little bit under the weather today. Mm.
I think you're going to making that noise every time Peter says something this time.
Yeah, can we get a sound effect queued up, please?
So we all go.
I will. I'll get a canned studio audience so that every time you cough, it'll kind of do that aww sound that you get. Because I'll get bored to doing it. Frankly, I do it generally when you talk. I just usually do it in my head.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But, I mean, even though I'm ill, I just absolutely the worst flu ever had. And it is flu.
I've had.
I just couldn't miss the podcast.
Yeah.
I couldn't miss it.
Because you're a survivor. You ain't going to give up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Is that Destiny's Child? Is that what...
We
slipped back 13 years.
Sounds better when Beyonce does it. Not much debate, granted, yeah. But yeah. It does a little bit. Anyway, we've loosely hinted at some news. Loosely, directly, whatever. But it's been quite a big week. So two particularly prominent things. We've got big companies with huge releases, huge product lines being launched, and we've got large American civil organizations making tits out of themselves. So to discuss these two grand subjects, we'll slink on over to the news.
News!
Guys, I've got an amazing idea for a new game, right? You know Skylanders?
Mm.
No.
Well, that's made quite a lot of money, you see. Because what it does is it gets you to buy a game, and you pay money for a game, and then you buy little toys that goes with the game, and you have a little portal, and you put the toys on the portal, and the little toys, they zoom through subspace or whatever, and they turn up in the game on the screen. And it's an amazing thing, and kids love it, and they get their parents to buy the game, and then they hassle them for toys, and then more toys, and then a few more toys, and then in the end you end up spending £100 on the game, and Activision makes loads of money.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I'm reckoning is we should do one of those, right?
We should.
But, yeah, we could make it with, like, Disney characters and stuff.
I think that would probably sell a lot.
Do you think? I'm thinking yes, because you got Disney and all them things, and you got those monsters in Monsters, Inc., and you got, like, you know...
I think that could probably sell infinite amounts.
Infinitely. I concur. I'll just Google the copyright for that. I think we can call it, I don't know, Disney Forever, Disney Endless, Disney Infinite. Infinite has a nice ring. Disney Infinite. Let's have a look at that. Tap 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 on my keyboard. Oh no, you wouldn't believe it.
You type very quickly, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and loudly and vocally. Disney, right? Yeah, they've only gone and done it themselves. The buggers. I know. Disney has announced Disney Infinite, which is its own version of Skylanders, a figure-based cross-platform sandbox game.
This is exciting to me. The video, right? the video, if and I think we've got it up on the site if you haven't seen it. The video looks like it's for Disney Infinity, looks like it's open world almost.
Yeah, it does.
And that was the one thing that was sort of missing from Skylanders, and that's car crime. Right?
Not much car crime amongst purple dragons?
No, not a lot. On the sort of subject of Skylanders, as a side note for those interested, I have fallen deeper into the Skylanders rabbit hole, and I now have a 3DS. I got sent the 3DS pack.
Right.
And I also got given for Christmas the PlayStation 3 version. So now I have like 20 figures, right?
Oh my.
And I think I quite like them. So this, I want to see whether or not Aladdin would win in a fight with like Captain Jack Sparrow or... I don't know, the genie. I'd like to put him up against the genie, Aladdin.
Did this not go up on our? Have I dreamt this, or was this on our Twitter account? This very question not long ago.
Well, we asked this question in one of the podcasts because we discussed this a couple of months ago. I found a story that this got leaked. This information.
Yes, I remember.
And then I went to publish it, and we couldn't publish it because between the time of me starting the story and 45 minutes later, the article had been pulled. So Disney had stepped in and said, no, you ain't seen nothing to whoever, you know, published it originally. And so I had no source, so I couldn't pull it. But I knew, I bloody knew it. And I mentioned it on the podcast. So if you have listened to this podcast regularly, you'll be 2-3 months ahead of the game on this one. Like Peter said, similar to the Skylanders thing, how you collect all the little toys and then you can port them into the game. You could buy, for example, an Incredibles toy set. So you'd be able to buy a little box that will contain all the toys from all the family in The Incredibles. And what it'll let you do is take them and then fight against Syndrome, who's the bad guy in The Incredibles, using all the various superpowers and bits and bobs. Alternatively, you could get, for example, a Monsters University toy kit, which will give you what they describe as like an Animal House-style game, in which Sully and Mike have prank wars with frat monsters from rival schools. And then a Pirates of the Caribbean one, that'll involve like ships, customizing ships and fighting and everything. So not only do you get the different characters, but the gameplay will actually change depending on what characters you buy, which is quite neat, actually. That seems like a novel idea. And as you say, something that Skylanders doesn't do, to the best of my knowledge.
They do now do play sets. So you know how you can buy like individual characters, yeah?
Yeah.
And you add them and they sort of play around. Well, now you can buy a cannon, and that gives you a bonus game, which is a cannon game where you fire a cannon and you are a Skylander. That's as far as I know. It's kind of like a small expansion pack, I suppose.
Okay.
Like an old school expansion pack. So they do that sort of stuff, but they're not doing anything on the scale that Disney's interested in. Like this sounds like it's something that just has not been done.
It is kind of huge, and it's going across all platforms from what we understand, apart from the Vita. The Vita hasn't been mentioned. It's like Wii U, Xbox 360, PS3, mobile devices, as in like smartphones and things, and the 3DS, no mention of the Vita.
Yeah, I mean,
that doesn't bode particularly well.
I think with the Vita, obviously you would probably need a custom piece of hardware to get that working, unless you could somehow make it compliant with the 3DS version, and I don't think that is a reality.
Mm. The 3DS version needs its own custom thing as well, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, but then there is already the install base that's there.
Well, I'm interested to know, like, Keith, the Skylanders has been out for a while, the install base is already pretty huge, and it's been really successful. Are Disney coming to this a little bit late in the day, do you think? Or is there still room for them to kind of take over the market?
There's always room, because people, Disney's one of those brands where people won't even look at something until Disney turns up. It's a bit like Nintendo, really. It's one of them things, even people who kind of hate this genre will now suddenly love it if they're Disney fans. Disney has a kind of, reaches part of the world that other brands can't, kind of thing. It's...
Yeah, the power of the mouse.
Sickly sweet and, you know, yeah. I'm not sure anyone likes Mickey Mouse, do they? I don't think anyone likes Mickey. It's
That's true. It's more like Disney's more synonymous with Pixar now, isn't it?
Mm.
Like the young kids, they know The Incredibles and Monsters, Inc. and stuff. They don't really know.
Up's a good movie, yeah.
Yeah, Up is a good movie. Wally's a guy I like. Wally's my favourite, I think. arguably.
That's what people call you, isn't it? A noise.
So yeah, this is coming sometime in June. It should be turning up on iOS devices. There's going to be all manner of extras coming, like the idea of, is there going to be any additional content? It's going to be nothing but additional content, by the looks of it. You'll get your portal, and then you'll get, a little starter group of characters. I think Jack Sparrow is one of them, and Sully's another one. Yeah. And then from there on, the world is their lobster, pretty much, because after this, as we discussed before, it's Marvel characters. They can put the Marvel franchises, jam them in, and then Star Wars.
Yes.
So, Jim Henson.
Jim Henson?
What?
Well, not him himself, but, you know, all of his, you know, they've got Big Bird, they've got, they own all that, don't they?
They own Sesame Street.
Yeah, they bought Henson's lot after he died, didn't they?
No, they don't own Big Bird then, because that's owned by...
That might be always that PBS, was that?
They
own the Muppets, don't they?
I think they own the Muppets rather than Sesame Street, because technically the animals on Sesame Street are not Muppets.
No.
Technically.
Some of them are real people.
I know. What?
They have some people, don't they, live down that street?
Do they?
Yeah, they used to talk to them, and they, you know, Grouch would come out of his bin, and they'd be placed, stood next to the bin, and they have a little conversation. Yeah.
Are smoking crack. That is not a real thing.
They have real people in Sesame Street.
No, I don't agree.
There was one called Daphne, I think, and then they get the had, oh, they all had names. They're probably changing now. I'm talking about, like, this is the 80s. But...
That was the Snuffleupagus.
You have real people in Sesame Street. They all talk to them.
I don't think that's true.
Our listeners will back me up, but
they will. It's based on a real street, I hear. It's a gritty urban documentary about the cruel realities of living in a dustbin.
I'm going to find a picture while we're doing the podcast.
You campaign to prove Peter wrong. We'll move on to a different subject. I want to quickly touch on this before we get into another a big subject. Star Command, which is that kick-started space management game.
Is that out yet, James?
Oh, well, you know, it's supposed to be out because they said it was going to be in January. Let me just check the App Store with my typing computer. Star Command. Oh, no, you wouldn't believe it. Apparently, Star Command has been delayed again. Yep, supposed to come out this month. They promised a January release earlier, and the latest report says, we had a play testing run-through with average gamers in Boulder, CO. Boulder, CO? Where the hell's that? Somewhere in America. Last week, and the tutorial is not up to snuff. They were getting lost, apparently. So, in hopes of making the game as accessible as possible, we are revising it. So, it seems that they gave it to some people, they didn't understand the tutorial, and so they're having to redo the whole thing. And therefore, it's not coming out in January anymore. Which is kind of a shame, because people were looking forward to this. If you haven't heard about it before, this is the game that you essentially manage your own spaceship. It looks a lot like the kind of theme park and Sims games, but pixel art style, based, drawing from things like Star Trek and that kind of stuff. Looked fun, lots of buzz about it online, due to arrive now, but actually hasn't. Have you just posted a picture, Keith, from Sesame Street into the window? You have, haven't you? Oh, God.
It's clearly Photoshop.
Photoshopped.
How do you say that?
Snuffleupagus.
Snuffleupagus?
Yes.
That's clearly, like, you can see, like, there's a woman in front of the Snuffleupagus, and, like, clearly you can see the outline of where it's been photoshopped. I think this is one big ruse by Keith.
I can't believe you don't. They have conversations and stuff. They have little stories each week. And
the best thing about that photo, and obviously you can't see it, maybe we can link to it, I don't know. But
visual gags on a podcast always work.
On the right hand side, you can see Grouch, and I always loved the Grouch because he was amazing, because he was just so annoyed at everything. He was just I live in a bin. I love the Grouch. He's like my idol, I think. That's what I aspired to as a child, to live in a bin and be a bit annoyed at everyone.
I think that explains your ill health, Pete.
I've done one of I've done one of those things.
Anyway, I'll insert an awe there. Anyway, War Balloon Games, responsible for Star Command, they said that they're going to announce a new date for it soon. They've missed too many dates not to get this one right, apparently.
Never miss dates, because the other person gets upset.
So how much longer do you think, when you've got people who have backed you on Kickstarter as people you have to answer to, how much longer do you think that these guys can go without actually releasing this game? Because there is this level of investment that people have now where they've paid for the game to get made, and they expect for them, you know, for their investment, they expect something on time, and these guys haven't delivered. I'm not, you know, obviously, you know, they're saying, well, that, you know, the tutorial's not as good as blah, 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 all this sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, they promised a date and they haven't hit it. And I wonder if this is the start of people sort of going, well, I've got your money now, you know.
But isn't there someone on Kickstarter who's already being sued by people who, I'm sure this came out a couple of weeks ago and everyone went a bit mad about it. I don't think it's a mobile project, but someone's being sued. It won't take many of things going wrong for people who were kind of on the borderline, should I or should I not back this or that to stop using it.
It's stories like this that make me glad I don't back stuff. Well, I haven't backed anything yet on Kickstarter, and I would love to, but there's just no guarantee.
Well, when it originally started, we have the wave of new projects starting up and everyone getting very excited. Now we're getting to the point, or even past the point in some instances, where projects were supposed to come in and be delivered. And now we are entering the time when people are going to either miss dates or deliver bad games, and the people who invested are going to get cross. And, you know, we could start to see the Kickstarter backlash fairly soon. But with this one, I think there's enough goodwill going towards it where people are prepared to wait longer. We haven't had lots of people on the site getting really, really angry. If we're still in the same situation in 6 months' time, then I think it'll be a different story. Yeah. But provided they, you know, they come in a couple of months or something, I think they'll be all right. Mm. And it does look kind of fun. So with any luck, Star Command will be turning up reasonably soon. But from space management sims to depressingly real-world shooting. We're not going to dwell too much on the dark side of it, but there was a lot of controversy a couple of days ago when the National Rifle Association, this is the same National Rifle Association, incidentally, who basically pinned the Sandy Hook shootings and several other mass shootings that have gone on in America on media, specifically video games, violent movies. As has happened a lot over the past couple of years, video games get fingered whenever there's a negative story that comes out relating to guns or gun crime. And this is nothing particularly new. The NRA executive Wayne LaPierre made a particularly reality-defying speech, let's say, after the shooting, which was kind of publicly decried. I've got to love the BBC. When they showed the speech on the BBC, in which he describes the video game industry as a callous, corrupt, and corrupting shadow industry that sells and sows violence against its own people. In the middle of the speech in which he quoted that line, the BBC reporters had to stop at least twice and remind viewers that this was a real speech and not a spoof.
What?
They actually had to say, no, this is actually happening, this is actually live, because some of the stuff he was coming out with was so kind of ludicrous that, yeah, they had to be reminded that this was real, and that now, someone wasn't going to come on and go, eh-eh.
Now, who thought that a group of people obsessed with weapons to kill others would be slightly weird in the head? Who would have thought that, eh?
Yeah, well, there you go.
So, you know, I guess it would be really easy for us to just fall down this path of why the NRA is ridiculous. And I think anybody with two brain cells to rub together knows that probably what our opinions are going to be on the actual NRA and what they stand for. But the really cool thing about this story is the sort of hypocrisy of it all.
Yeah.
The sort of blatant hypocrisy of it.
Well, to explain further, after their anti-video game rant, a month to the day, pretty much, on the anniversary of the shooting at Sandy Hook, the NRA released a video game in which you shoot things with guns. It's called NRA Practice Range.
Practice for what?
Practice for safe gun use within a responsible environment.
Yeah, let's use up all these bullets so that nobody can get killed by them.
That is, if you shoot all the bullets, Peter, then no one, there'll be none left and no one can kill anybody. And there you go. Problem solved. I wrote the article about it earlier in the week, and I was, you know, trying to be sensible, and like, you can't, because there are a few things you can say. Obviously, like you say, it's very easy to just get immediately onto your high horse and say, hang on a minute, you, but, you know, on the one hand, let's be reasonable, it's a rifle range game, so there is no actual murder. You're not shooting living targets. You're not running around in cars, stealing things, shooting through shop windows, abducting, killing, maiming, murdering. None of that. This is a clinical shooting range in which you handle guns, you shoot targets, some of which do actually resemble people, which I think is... But some of them are just circular targets like normal, and you have a range of weaponry, and in between the actual shooting bits, while the screens are loading and stuff like that, you're presented with safety information to do with how to maintain your guns and how to make sure that they're not pointed at anybody and all that sort of stuff. So it's posing as like a quasi-educational thing, but also a way to just for gun enthusiasts to practice target shooting without having to do it or engaging in any nasty murder killing sprees or anything like that. So that's in the NRA's defense.
It's only going to gain attention because it has their name on it, essentially. It's, you know, if it was just a shooting range game that happened to have come out now, I don't think it would be garnering any attention. But the fact that they've said what they said about games, plus the things that have happened recently, means it's... I mean, I don't know. Surely someone there must have a brain and think maybe this isn't the best time to be releasing this.
That's debatable, isn't it, Keith?
That's the crux of this whole thing. It's like, yes, if the game was released on its own by anybody, no one would bat an eyelid. But the fact of the matter is they have lambasted the games industry for doing this. And then now suddenly they slip out their own game with guns in it in the hopes of making a quick buck. And I don't know, somehow fail to see the hypocrisy or irony. Like I say, I'm sure they could argue that there's no killing, there's no murdering, it's not live targets, etc. And we're doing it as they have useful educational tidbits like always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction.
Yeah.
That's in the game. That's a quote from the loading screen of the game. So, you know.
I mean, I would be interested to know. I haven't looked, but whether this is it even being covered by American game sites or not?
It is. It is being covered. I've looked in people who have reviewed it and said the biggest crime is that it's awful. beyond anything else, it's just a really really bad game.
We do have to be aware that, I mean, I don't know what our percentage of listeners across the globe, you know, how it's split, but you know, this is thought of while the NRA, I don't think, have the best PR people in the world and come across generally not especially well. Some of the people who agree with, you know, the idea of being able to have guns of these sorts on your person, you know, are more sane, and there is they have what they would consider to be a legitimate reason for doing this. But I do think it's particularly bizarre that this should happen now.
Well, this is just another brilliant example of hypocrisy from a sort of outside organization, and when they come into video games, there's this history of like moral high horsery, which, yes, that is a phrase now that I've just made up. The lem sips are really going to my head, by the way. Now.
I like it. Stick with it.
Whenever violence sort of gets brought up, there's all sorts of people who come out and decry it and sort of say, oh, video games are doing X, Y, and Z. And then as soon as money gets put on the table, they're their ideas sort of changed their mind. Do you remember there was I don't know if you remember this, but there was a game on the PS1 called Martian Gothic Unification. And it was a really, really violent game. And I think it was set on Mars or something like that. And featured, like, horrible amount of death and, you know, nasty ways of dying. Mm-hmm. One of the voice actresses in that came out, like, 4 years later and said, oh, all violent video games are evil.
Oh, I did hear about this, yeah.
And, you know, you know, to come back to this story, you know, this is the NRA saying, you know, making blanket statements and saying video games are evil, you know, and they are that it is a shadow industry, you know, just making such cavalier statements like that. And then when there's money that they can make to, you know, either further their own cause or line their own pockets, whatever you want to think about them, like they go, yeah, fine. That's no problem because, oh, this version is OK. Like what we're doing is all right.
Well, they'd cite violent video games specifically, and they would, I'm sure, argue that their video game is not violent.
No, it doesn't accuse people.
However, the two big problems that we have here is, A, it got rated suitable for ages 4 and upwards.
Mm.
So, which seems that sort of hamstrings your argument a little bit. There is a good chance that that has more to do with the App Store rating system than the developers, necessarily.
Yeah, it definitely is.
It couldn't necessarily be blamed for that, but still. But the thing that I dug up, because everyone was focusing on the four ages 4 and upwards thing, which is obviously daft, but, you know, might not be the developer's fault. The guys publishing the game are a group called Medal Mobile. And I went to their site and looked through their back catalogue. Medal Mobile publishes some really, really violent games. Specifically, a game called Boxhead, which is a zombie shooter, which bears the tagline, "Prepare for mayhem, things are about to get bloody."
Yeah.
So, the NRA hate violent video game publishers, except when they're selling their games using violent video game publishers.
Mm. They're an interesting company anyway, Medal. I know they do a scheme where they buy up flagging titles that aren't doing very well that are supposed to be good, and then they try and make money out of them. It's interesting. I'm not sure they have a set thing. I think they just kind of go where they think the money is. So.
Oh, I'm sure Medal Mobile are doing, you know, they're just doing their thing. That's fine. Yeah. It's the fact that the NRA are allowing Medal. Because apparently violent video games are the enemy and they are evil, and who peddle them are, you know, the devil. So the fact that they're working with them seems to, you know, undercut their argument slightly. I don't know. It all just seems a bit.
Yeah, they it comes across as like you say, like, what, you know, you can think whatever you want about gun ownership and all that sort of stuff. I don't really have any strong opinions either way on it, but. But the NRA, the people who are actually representing those ideas, they are coming across as awful. I think it's just one of those things of, I think the NRA's handled this really, really badly, and they either need to sack their PR team or just kind of really think about what it is that what kind of statement it is that they want to make with NRA practice range. Like, and they really need to have this clear vision of what they want to be saying to the press, because at the moment it just seems like they are being a bit hypocritical. But if they were to come out and say, well, you know, this is about teaching you X, Y, and Z, this is about, you know, enjoying guns at a practice.
It would be like if Tesco this week had planned to release a game about making burgers or something. Something to do with horses. You know, it just seems really weird timing.
Yeah.
Even if this game is, you know, has legitimate reasons, you know, blah blah blah. Even if you want to put the NRA's name on it, just to release it in the current environment, you think, put it back a few months. It's like, why put it out now unless you want to court some of that controversy and annoy some people? And I don't know, it's all a bit weird.
And if you are going to do it, try and find a publisher that doesn't also peddle the very same violent games you claim are destroying the youth of your country.
Mm.
As a just, you know, just a little extra piece of advice there. Anyway, but we'll leave that because it's grim and tragic. But we have had some seriously, seriously high profile new releases that we've been sort of skirting around up until now. We're saving them for the big list. So we're going to go over and check out this week's new releases. First up on this week's new releases is, well, one of the biggest new releases we've had for quite a while. It kind of came out of nowhere, too. We were expected a big fanfare at first, and it just sort of information slipped out the day before, and now it's here. Temple Run 2 is now available for iPhone and iPad, the sequel to the 170 million selling predecessor. It is a game about a dude running away from some monkeys. Much like the first game, in fact. Mm. And it looks like Temple Run.
Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult to get excited about. Because when you played the first one, you kind of thought, oh, this is really good. This is really good fun. They put this together really well. And in the time that it's taken them for them to put out a sequel, it's been so cloned that another one of these isn't that exciting anymore. Like, it's really upset. Like, they've been, the second one is sort of hamstrung by its own success.
Yeah, a lot of developers have gone in and, yeah, as you say, made their own versions. And now I think we're getting to the point where we're getting endless runner apathy, where we've just had so many of these games and really another one. We've reviewed it. We've given it a bronze award. I think we gave the first one a bronze award as well. Shows what we know. But it's kind of commenting on the game as a whole rather than just the addictive nature of it. And that's what the first game had going for it, was that one-upmanship, addictive, got to have another go, got to keep running. This one, in its credit, looks much better, much better. Visually, it's leagues above the previous one, which isn't that hard because the first one didn't look very good. But it does look a hell of a lot better. You've got a whole bunch of new characters. So rather than just one guy, you've got sort of female archaeologist. You've got some dude in a red jacket. Don't know what he is, but he looks a bit trendy. They've got changes to the environments themselves. So instead of just constantly running through temples, you're going along sort of stone paths floating in the air. You've got winding around the edge of cliffs. The paths themselves kind of twist and turn a little bit. And there's a lot more up and down involved. So you climb up hills and go down valleys, which means that it'll obscure the next corner. So you're going up a steep hill, you can't see what's over the top. So that affects the gameplay as well. There's a few extra things. Zip lines have now been added. So you can jump and swoosh down. And while you're on the zip lines, you like tilt the device left or right, and it'll move the angle of the dude swinging down, which means you can steer him towards more gems and things like that. But aside from, you know, those kind of additions, if you've played Temple Run, you have played this. This is very much the same thing. Have either of you guys given it a go yet?
No, but well, I'm not a big fan of the 3D Endless Runner branch off of the normal kind of. I like Endless Runners. I don't really get the fuss about the 3D ones. They're just, I mean, I don't know this well, but part of what people have been saying is this one, the bends are much more smooth and whatever, and whereas the first batch and the ones that kind of follow Temple Run, you think, well, it's just a matter of timing, isn't it? I'm just swiping left or right at the right time. You know, I guess that's what all Endless Runners are, jumping or whatever, but I never really quite understood why people got so overwhelmed with it. But it's interesting what Pete said, talking about kind of Endless Runner apathy, all that. I mean, they're talking to us at the moment, haven't actually got back just yet, but one of the things we have asked them is, how do they plan on staying ahead in this genre when there have been so many games that have followed, you know, even their own, the Temple Run Brave kind of link up. So many games have come since Temple Run, and what can you do with this formula that doesn't mess it up too much, yet you still want to change it enough to get people coming back? You know, it's sequels, especially when you're in a kind of narrow genre like this, are really quite tricky. Because
especially, you know, when you essentially defined the genre in the first place.
Exactly, and now everyone has kind of mastered it, perhaps some of them even better. This is one of those genres that in a couple of years' time, we'll be kind of wondering why people kind of went so nuts about it.
It's a mini Guitar Hero.
Well, yeah. Maybe.
It's a very quick and easy time killer, and I have seen its addictive effects, particularly on, well, my niece. We got my mum an iPad for Christmas. She went up to Scotland, where my nieces are, and yeah, she just showed it to, like, you know, about 5-6-year-old niece or something. And she was just like going mad for it for absolutely ages. It's just, it's that easy, it's that simple, it's that accessible. And I guess it really does just connect in the same way as Angry Birds connected with everybody. This one really just kind of locked in with audiences worldwide. And 170 million downloads. I mean, it's got to be doing something, right?
Not bad.
The chances of it chasing the success of the previous game are unlikely. I would say.
I wouldn't say that. I would say it's probably got this game in it. I would say a Temple Run 3, or maybe more tie-ins with other brands like Brave may well stretch it a bit too much. But I would thought this one that the enthusiasm is you know it's there still for this at the moment. But I think in a couple of years' time we will start to think. Not sure why we were all so enamoured with this kind of stuff. But I mean, you know, it's trending on Twitter as we speak, and people were all over it when the mere suggestion that it was coming out kind of happened. So I'd say at the moment people are
up for it.
Up for it.
Well, we'll see if this kind of outstays its welcome or not. But yeah, we gave it a bronze award. Said it's you know more of the same. If you liked the first one, it definitely looks smarter and there's more to it than the first one. So that's a bonus. You can download it right now for free for iPhone and iPad.
Free?
And you are probably free. There are in-app purchases and stuff, but you're probably already downloading it right now. So good luck to you there. The next one we'll talk about is. I looked at the title and said, oh god.
which joke shall I make next?
I know, it's almost too easy. Square Enix have released their latest game. Did I say game? I meant in-app purchase distribution system. Yeah. Final Fantasy All the Bravest is the newest game from Square Enix, available for your iPhone and your iPad. It is a weird mashup where it's taken all the characters from the Final Fantasy series, bunged them all into one game, and then allowed you to basically fight big bosses, creatures, and beasties from throughout the Final Fantasy series. Rather than it taking the standard top-down adventure game tactic, where everybody's you know exploring a big universe in you know 40-hour-long role-playing sessions, this is basically stringing together battle after battle after battle. And the control system for the combat is very, very simple, like super simple. So you got maybe like 10, 15 characters on screen at any one time, your own characters. You're all fighting one boss. To attack your boss, you just put your finger on whichever character you want to attack, and they attack. That's it. So you just keep swiping and tapping as their attack bars you know run up. As soon as they're ready to attack, bing, then you tap them, they go in and attack. And that is it. There is no kind of extra additional spells or anything like that. There is one thing where you have like a, I forget what it's called now, but there's some flashy limit thing where every 3 hours you can hit it and they can all attack at the same time. But apart from that, it's like a really, really uber simple version of the Final Fantasy game.
But oh my god, it's got Cloud in it and you can ride a chocobo.
You can have Cloud and Chocobo and Terra from Final Fantasy VI and everyone all together in your party at the same time, which sounds... like a great thing. If you're a fan of the genre, if you're a fan of Final Fantasy, then this is like sounds like heaven. However, it's £2.49 to buy the game, right? Or $3.99.
Fair enough. That sounds cheap to me.
That sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Yes. Yep. That's reasonable, isn't it? So for that, you'll get all the characters, right?
Yep.
No, you won't. You get 25 basic party members, but in order to get the characters you really want, your Cloud Strifes and your Terrors and whatnot, you have to buy them via in-app purchases. There are 35 premium characters, each of which costs 69p, 99 cents. So, if you want to collect all the characters you actually want to play as throughout the game, it's going to cost you £24 or $34. On top of your initial £2.50 outlay. But wait... there's more. You can also buy additional worlds in which to fight. For these, you will need world tickets. There are 3 additional worlds, each one of which costs £2.49. So there is an extra £7.50 you can pay on top of that. Also, you have in-app purchases that you can use to buy consumable items. So if you want to speed up your party members' attack times, then you can buy hourglasses, which you can buy in batches of 3 for 69p, or 8 for 149, or 20. For $1.99. These are consumable and you can buy as many as you like. That sounds reasonable, doesn't it?
The thing is that I don't actually understand why anybody would want to pay for these characters, because what we think of as character in a video game, especially in a Final Fantasy, the reason that people remember Squall so vividly from Final Fantasy VIII is because of his challenging of what reality was and his sort of struggle to find peace within a world that was against him. Like, you know, it's exactly the same with Cloud. You know, you remember that because you remember Aerith, because you remember how he went up against, you know, the white-haired one that everyone loves and draws pictures of.
Sephiroth,
that's all. And
I just remember their massive, impossible swords.
Well, yeah, but so these are the things. But what you're getting with this game, it doesn't seem like you're actually getting any decent amount of story, or if it's going to, you know, having, you know, Cloud in your party is actually going to affect the way that the story moves forward. It's literally, you're buying a sprite.
Yes, like, you are.
And, like, this is, people joked about buying horse armor back when it was back on the 360, when all of this DLC stuff kicked off. People joked about buying, like, profile images for your Vita, right? Mm. Like, this is just as bad. It's just as bad. And how on earth Squeenix keep getting away with this is utterly unknown to me. I've no idea why they keep doing it.
Well, there's been a huge amount of sort of kickback online. People have, all the press I've seen covering it has been negative, not just because of the saying the in-app purchases are sort of cynical, but just saying that the game isn't really very good, which is probably, you know, more offensive. And I don't know, I don't even think we've hit the zenith of it, though. Sorry, the nadir, whichever one's the low one. I'm not sure we're there yet, but they are, Square Enix are arguably one of the worst offenders in this category, and you know, we've talked about it numerous times before. This just seems barely even a game.
At some point, they're going to release a version of Curiosity where every tap costs you 69 pence and all you uncover is a picture of Cloud crying. Like, that's all it'll be, and yet people will still buy it, because, and they'll buy the soundtrack to go with it at the same time. I'm getting less and less and less patience for Square Enix fans. Like, way less. Like, and I mean, like, traditional Square Enix, because obviously they also put out Hitman. You know, what a weird company that is now. But, like, yeah, like, for people who sort of love, they are just absolutely, I don't know if we're allowed to say this, but they are whoring out the Final Fantasy name. Like, it literally stands for nothing anymore. You know, this is daylight robbery. Like, let's not mix words. This is daylight robbery.
Yeah. Well, you can, if you really want to buy that, you can get it. It's $249, iPhone and iPad, and yeah, knock yourself out, I guess. But we advise you actually knock yourself out before you click buy, and that way you won't buy it, and you won't keep encouraging them to do this stuff. And they might focus more on games and less on silly little
I think, Peter, that's quite an interesting point, though. It's kind of what, for different reasons, but what I kind of think happened to Sega, really, of this kind of washing out the brand by doing all these weird things all in different directions that don't actually link up. It's like,
yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest issue, isn't it? It's not necessarily that people are going to spend a lot of money. I, you know, as somebody who's an aficionado, I don't mind spending a lot of money on games. Like, I, you know, you come into this medium, if you're interested in it, you kind of have to accept that you might end up spending a whole bunch of money. That's fine. It's the fact that Final Fantasy, and you'll notice that they do not do this with Dragon Quest. In Japan, Dragon Quest is still, it's like, the seller. Like, it's, you know, it's still the big franchise. And I think that Final Fantasy, obviously, over there is a big franchise, but it's not quite as big as DQ. And I think Square Enix Japan, who are, you know, making these sorts of games and sort of calling a lot of these shots, I think that they're using the Final Fantasy brand and just poisoning it. Like, they're just making, they, you know, if this didn't have the Final Fantasy name to it, people would laugh. Like, people would laugh at how awful that was and what a terrible waste of money it would be. But because it's Final Fantasy, you end up having this split of people who are absolutely furious that they're ruining the Final Fantasy name, and people who don't care because they're too into their, you know, Final Fantasy VII fan fiction to actually to give a monkeys. Like, I don't know. Now the caffeine's getting to me. Now the caffeine's getting to me.
You've gone from ill to angry.
I think he's right. I think you can only do this kind of thing for so long before eventually you do wash out the brand. I mean, it's a bit similar to kind of what Sega did with Sonic, really. You wash it out so much.
What's a Sonic game now? What's a Final Fantasy game now? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Is it a music game? Probably. Like, you know. Yeah. Is it a...
Well, yeah, go and find it online if you want to, but we would probably recommend you don't. Wait till they release a proper game, eh? I'll touch briefly on a few others, because we have had other new releases, but we need to get on to what we've been playing. Specifically, Momonga Pinball Adventures, which I'll mention briefly here, but I've been playing this week. It is a weird hybrid of pinball and top-down kind of adventuring. It's quite unusual, it's very different, and I'm really excited about it, and I think it's great. But I'll talk about it a little bit more later. You can grab it for 99p for iPhone and iPad if you want to. Jumping on, we've got a new release from Orange Pixel, the guys behind Meganoid and Super Drill Panic. Which is a Contra-style side-scrolly shooter, which is pretty much what this company does, called Gunslugs. More to do with guns than slugs, I'd imagine. It is a standard retro side-scrolling platformer, so run along, shoot everything, boxes, people, whatever. You're fighting a group called the Black Duck Army, and you have to shoot soldiers, voodoo priests, giant hellworms, anything. Everything. Apparently it's taken its lead from The Expendables, the movie. I don't remember there being gigantic hell worms in The Expendables. Perhaps it's in the Blu-ray special edition. I don't know. This is available for iPhone and iPad. You can get it for £149 or $199. It's quite good. I played it earlier today. These are fun. They pretty much do the same game, this company. It's always this side-scroll retro jumpy shooty thing with 8-bit visuals, but it is fun. It's done nicely, so you can have a look at Gunslugs. Next up, again, another group who do these kind of retro platformer games. Ravenous Games have released one called Infesta. You're a little green blob, and you have to jump into the bodies of your enemies and then use them to advance through the levels. So your enemies will have specific skills. Some might be able to jump, some might be able to climb, so you need to inhabit their bodies and then use them to get to the next level, which is how I make most of my journeys into town, actually. I look at the quickest person, and then I just hop on their back. Then I'm like, giddy up! And off they go. It's
also led to numerous relationships you've had, hasn't it? So.
All my best friends I meet that way. Because it's a good sort of icebreaker, and also it's a good test of character.
And backbreaker as well.
I like my friends to be sturdy and load-bearing. It's from the same guys who did League of Evil. It's 69p 99 cents. Go and have a look at that. There's another one which has got a zombie football game. We've already had a zombie football game called Zombie Pro Football or something, I think it was, but it's one of the flick versions of the game. So you've got a ball on the bottom of the screen, you've got a bunch of zombies coming towards you, and you flick the ball, you know, flick upwards, and the ball flies into the faces of the zombies, and you've got to kill them all. Well, they're already dead. You've got to kill them again, flatten them. And it's from CG Matic Studios, and you can download that for free. Visuals look all right. Haven't played the game, couldn't tell you, but go and have a look. And I think finally, Life is Magic, which is kind of an interesting idea. They've gone for taking an RPG, fantasy RPG format, and mixed it with location-based gameplay. So it uses the layout of your streets and in the surrounding areas, but then it like superimposes a fantasy world over the top of it. So it's kind of classic fantasy RPG, but based around the actual geography of your immediate location. We've reviewed it, gave it a bronze award, said it was quite good, and solid RPG fun, they say. But and it makes you look at the world a little bit differently. I imagine you could get the same effect if you, I don't know, drank heavily or consumed paracetamol and Lemsip, like Peter. I'm sure this is how the world looks to Peter right now, actually.
Oh, the colours, man.
Exactly. Well, you can get that now. Don't know how much it costs. Some money. But Life is Magic. Go and have a look at that. All the games I've spoken about just then are up for our Game of the Week award. Every week we run a Game of the Week thing where we choose the best games that have come out, and then you...
Games every week?
Games, yes, I know, it's bizarre, isn't it? It means that we cobble together a little list, and then you, the listener slash reader, can go over to our Facebook page and go onto the actual article itself and vote for the game which you think should be the Game of the Week. And then the winner, we kind of cover it on the Monday. So you've got the next Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you've got the next few days to vote for what you think deserves to be the best game, and then we'll give it some extra coverage and props and whatnot. So head on over to Facebook and go to the actual site itself and judge. You be the judge of what is best. But we've been playing games, and we should probably talk about them. So let's go and find out what we've been playing. Peter Wellington, what have you been playing?
Well, I am a bit of a frugal gamer, and...
they call you the frugal gamer.
That's what they call me, actually. Yeah. And then I stab them.
with your very cheap knife. Which was on offer at the time you bought it.
I got Woolies.
Exactly.
So iTunes, Apple did that... did that like 12 days of Christmas thing.
Oh, yeah.
They were giving away Shark Dash, and I saw it, and I thought to myself, do you know what, that's my game loft, and it looks like it's a load of old tat, and I'm going to download it and give it a go. And I didn't give it a go until this week, actually.
Oh. Well, I hear it was supposed to be the next Angry Birds.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a physics-based puzzler where you pull back on an object and fling it about a screen. I wonder whether or not this sounds familiar.
That's groundbreaking stuff. Do tell me.
But it's got a bit more action to it, and it keeps its events, you know, its systems all within a much more confined space. So the idea is that you're pinging sharks around a bathtub, and you have to eat these ducks, these sort of, I'm sure they are probably quite angry birds, in so much as you eat them, and that would make me angry if I got eaten by a shark. And you use your sort of special powers for your sharks to do different things. So, like, one of them can cut through little ropes. Actually, do you know what? This just sounds like a mashup of every brilliant iOS game ever. It starts out pretty simple in so much as you're just flinging these sharks around, and you just have to kind of, you know, make sure that you aim at these ducks and get them, and then also maybe pick up some coins. And, you know, if you get the coins, that's like an extra medal that you get at the end, like out of, you know, like three medals, essentially, like a three-star system. Again,
No!
Sound familiar. Yeah. But then it introduces these special mechanics whereby, you know, sort of one of them can cut through ropes, one of them can... fly out of the air at high speeds and dive down really, really quickly. You can fling your shark into one of these vacuum tubes, and it'll get flung out in a completely different direction. And it really makes you sort of have to think about what move it is that you're going to make next, so that you can, you know, get all of these ducks, or get all of these ducks and these coins at the same time. It gets really, really tricky. And as I say, it is quite fast paced. It's a lot more... Whereas with something like an Angry Birds, generally you can sort of fling stuff, fire, you know, forget, and, you know, kind of take your time with it. Mm. This one, you actually have to be quite dexterous with your fingers. Did you just laugh, Keith? Did you just laugh at... Yeah, okay.
Enough said.
Okay. So it does. It definitely requires a lot of finger dexterity. You know, you might have a shark flying out of one tube, and you're going to need to fling another shark at the same time to knock over another object so that it pushes another thing out of the way. It's kind of an Angry Birds meets an Incredible Machines, you know, and it's got all of that game loft money behind it, so it's got a lot of polish. It's the music's good, the sound effects are absolutely brilliant. Like, Keith, if you haven't played it, like, you will fall in love with these sharks and these ducks. The ducks, I would argue, are actually better adversaries than the pigs.
No.
Seriously, these ducks are amazing. And it's just you know, really well put together, very very plain, in so much as it's not an exciting game. It's not brand new, you know, there's nothing you haven't really seen here before, but it's all put together in such a great way that it's well worth taking a look at. I think it's 69p at the moment or something like that. But yeah, if you like Angry Birds but you want a bit more out of it, a bit more skill maybe, then go and check that one out.
So Sharks for Peter then. Better than the birds.
Way better than birds.
Easily. No one's scared of birds, are they? And they didn't make a movie called Birds. Or rather, what would it be? Beak, I suppose. Yeah. If Beaks. You're using the Jaws analogy, it'd be Beaks. Yeah, that's no summer blockbuster. That's not defining the 70s, is it? No.
No.
Ridiculous. Anyway, I've been playing something that is new, is interesting, and is also really good. Genuinely excited about it. It's called Momonga Pinball Adventures.
Mm.
The second word in that title would usually be a complete turnoff for me. I'm not a huge pinball game fan. Like, I played them a bit as a kid, and I went through a period, and the Amiga had a particularly good pinball game, if we're going back. I forget, Pinball Dreams, I think it was.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, that was really, really good. But I kind of got my fill of it there, and I haven't really felt the need to go back and attack pinball games again. This I saw late last year and just struck me as something exciting, something different, a bit fresh, a bit interesting. It takes the pinball mechanics and then mixes them with kind of a top-down, almost like an adventure game. So what it is you are cast as a flying squirrel called Momo. You're trained up by a panda. You're being trained up to be like a ninja warrior. But being a ninja apparently involves curling up into a little ball and then being beaten with pinball flippers and bounced around a level. So it's got that super monkey ball thing where the little animal's zooming around the level. But instead of using accelerometers, you're using pinball flippers. The levels themselves are designed in such a way that they'll have different areas, different zones. So you'll have, you know, flippers at the bottom of the screen maybe, and then there'll be all this kind of Aztec-looking environments. It's very sort of lush, it's sort of green, lots of outdoor areas. And you have to bounce around the levels, either collecting stars, activating switches, which will then open doors, smashing into maybe brick constructions in order to bash them down and open up an exit. Or even attacking enemies as well. This is all done. The only commands you have are the paddles, you know, the flippers at the bottom left and right. So it takes a certain amount of timing and, sort of pre-planning to work out which bit you're aiming for, which is obviously where the pinball thing comes in. That's what pinball's all about. But firstly, there's more of a reason to do it here. There's a kind of a loose narrative tying it all together. The idea is, you know, your clan has been attacked by owls, so you're off trying to, you know, get vengeance on a bunch of bloody owls, which isn't a huge driving factor, but it does at least sort of have a narrative. And there's this element that feels like you are exploring, you're progressing, rather than just going round and round and round the same pinball table. You'll kind of clear an area, and then you have to shoot for a little bounce pad. And you flip onto the bounce pad, and then it launches you off, and you'll ping over to the next environment, and there'll be a whole new area waiting for you. Then, because you're a flying squirrel, it'll ping you up into the air, and suddenly you'll be flying. You'll have to glide across this, like, canyon, and there'll be trails of stars that you have to tilt the accelerometer left and right, and you will, you know, collect all the stars. Then it'll drop down, and you'll be back in another pinball environment again. So it breaks up the gameplay. I've not seen anything like it, really. It's beautifully presented, properly gorgeous. The squirrel is cute, the environments are really well done, the gameplay is interesting. There's like 9 chapters involved, and it doesn't take a huge amount of time to complete them. You can probably do it all in like 45 minutes an hour, but once you've completed each episode, each chapter, you have 5 challenges that you are supposed to then tackle. So you could go back and try and do it in a certain time, or try and destroy everything on the map, or, you know, there are little micro challenges. And the way that it plays and the sort of pleasurable experience that you get from just pinging the guy around and attacking these levels, you want to go back and do them. You actually want to be a bit of a completionist. So there'll be a lot more in it beyond just I've completed all the levels. And also it's the first part of what should be a three-part saga. So hopefully there'll be more to come. I really hope it does well. It's definitely worth your time. Go and have a look at it on the site. Weird name, Momonga. Pinball Adventures, but do go and check this one out. I think it's a really good example of a developer who's tried a new concept, worked on the visuals, it's excellent across the board. If I had complaints, loading screens are a bit long. They aren't instant restarts, which I think is a shame in this kind of game. But maybe that's just my iPad 1 being rubbish, I'm not sure. But the loading times are a little bit longer than I'd like, and as I say, it is a bit short, but I think there's a lot more gameplay in it than initially appears. And it's just charming and awesome, and frankly, if paddling a flying squirrel in the ass till a talking panda smiles is wrong, then I don't want to be right. Keith, why don't you tell us what you've been playing?
Yes, I have gone back in time this week.
Ooh,
really?
In kind of Peter style, I've been playing something that a lot of other people played quite a while ago now, I guess. But I've been playing... I borrowed a friend's iPad 3 to play The Room.
Oh! Yet another person who's played The Room when I haven't.
Yes.
So bitter.
it's become my bedtime game, as it were, kind of play around in it. Before slipping off into the world of dreams.
Is that a nice wholesome bedtime game, or the other kind?
You've got to play it actually, because it's slightly mysterious. It loses something in the daytime. It's a bit like trying to play something, watch a scary movie when it's brilliantly sunny outside. You kind of need to play it by yourself, in the dark.
Mm.
And it's interesting because the first 20 minutes or so of me playing it, I wasn't really quite sure, because stripping it back, what it is just it's a point and click, but what they've done is kind of where you spend a lot of your time in most point and clicks, walking around from location to location, or from scene to scene, because you're usually controlling a person. This is all kind of stripped out, and essentially, your places are the different sides of the box that sits in the middle of this room. And so you kind of think, oh, I miss the walking about. I mean, I'm a massive Broken Sword fan, and one of the big draws, if not probably the main draw about that, is the plot and the kind of interaction and the jokes and all that. But there is a plot, and as you unlock more and more of this box, you get little clips, and it's all a bit spooky, and what's happened, you read these notes that have been left, these letters, and it's almost slightly Bioshock in that you're getting glimpses of something that's happened, and you're only seeing bits of it as you go along. You don't have the whole picture. It's all quite confusing, but intriguing. And actually, the puzzles themselves on each side of the box are very good. They're just so far, I mean, I'm nowhere near the end, but so far they're just challenging enough to make you think, but they're not so challenging that you're going to think, well, I don't know what the answer to that is, and walk away and never go back to it. It's and I mean, there is a little hint system that it kind of leads you. I assume I don't know whether it's based on how long you sat staring at the screen or how many moves you make without solving it, but you do get these little prompts that come up and tell you. And so, yeah, I've kind of done a bit of a 180. I was starting thinking, I'm not sure why everyone's been going mad about this, but now I'm kind of thinking, oh, I want to play that again. I want to play that in a minute. I want to have a quick go on that, because it does look gorgeous, and... the mechanics of it are just very easy. Just tap this to use it. Some of these games can get overly complicated and in the way you utilize things you pick up and so forth, but this is really just tap and drag to use it in this area, and it works very easily, and yeah, it has a nice mystery about it that you would imagine that you would need to have, like, characters talking to you or things like that to actually build that kind of mystery, but it just does it with these little glimpses you get of the past. It's very clever. So I don't know if it's quite... I mean, I can't remember what score. I'm sure it got very high scores, didn't it?
I think it got a gold, yeah.
I'm not sure if it's quite worthy of, like, an edge 10, as you'd call it, but It's certainly a good game, and the people behind it actually know what they're doing. It's yeah. So I'm actually have to give the iPad back today. So I might never play it again. But,
Well, I was kind of hoping you were going to say it was rubbish, so I didn't feel so bad for not playing it. But no, you've just like everyone else has said it's good.
It's not. It's not good enough that you should go out and buy an iPad 3 or 4 to get it. But
that's good. Because I don't have the money. So
if you have one, I can see why it does something that a lot of other. It manages to do something. You know, it feels incredibly like an old-fashioned point and click, but somehow manages to make it feel very current, very very iPad. If you know what I mean. So. Yes, I recommend it so far.
All right. Another thumb up for the room.
And I don't like games, so yeah.
No, that's praise indeed. So have a look at the room and do have a look at the Momonga pinball game, because these are indie dudes and this is a good game and we want more, I think. So check those out. You can find all the information on pokegamer.co.uk. Do go and vote for your game of the week. Have your say. Let us know what you think is best, worst. Go and have a look at pokegamer.biz for some sexy interviews. And check us out on Facebook and find us on Twitter as well. Cast your votes. Read some stories. Have a ball. We will catch you sometime next week. Thanks for listening. Take it easy. Bye-bye.